Oh man, that was a good one. That was a really good high five.
That was a really good high five. I'm in pain.
That's always what they do, right?
What?
It's like they're impressed by how painful it is. Like, wow, that is stinging.
Hey guys, welcome to the Red Switch Podcast. My name's Suresh and I'm here with Bart.
Hello.
Weber.
Moin.
I just don't expect that.
What?
I just expected a Hayden and a Moin. Try it again. Hey guys, welcome to the Red Switch Podcast. My name is Suresh, I'm here with Bart.
Hey.
Adamia.
Hey.
And Oiva.
Dead about.
What?
He's just saying words now. That could be like...
Derve is the most common high in Finnish, and it actually isn't high, it means health. So whenever Finnish people...
how do you say bad?
Greet each
other. Bad?
They just say health.
What about... how do you say bad?
Health. Bad. Baha.
Baha terve.
But Baha is kind of like evil.
Oh, bad terve. So if I get someone to say that, I say, bad health!
I don't think we have a direct translation for the word bad. We have the evil counterpart, which is
Finland
Baha.
Is so good. They don't even know.
We don't have the word bad. Everything is
when something is, when something is bad in like a degenerative state, as in something isn't working well, then
it's less good.
Then it's huono.
Okay.
But yeah, when I say terve, that means I am greeting you and I'm actually saying health, which is the same as hi.
So it's called something like silly, like you normally do, like that prison thing and like that.
Well, actually, Bart and I were talking about if you were to become a drug dealer.
Oh, this is good. Yeah.
If you were to become a drug dealer.
A drug dealer.
Okay. Here's another hypothetical question.
Yeah.
If you had to be a drug dealer.
Yeah.
What special methods would you employ to never get caught and to be like super good at? I get being a drug dealer, I don't know.
Would we be like...
If I had to be a drug dealer?
Let's say
I'm a drug dealer.
What do you mean had to be?
I chose this.
If we were to build it up and become like drug cartels and stuff as well.
Well, like...
Oh, yeah.
Like Breaking Bad.
Breaking Bad, like Breaking Bad.
Oh.
Amazon lockers. Post lockers in general. That's one point. And
that's not a point, you just said stuff. Okay, what do you want to do with those lockers? And
no, I would get on Amazon and I would get something that's incredibly competitive where people are trying to get in but don't really get into. I don't know, like selling pretty much any little merchandise, the smallest ones that they could
still fit. Merchandise.
Okay, you're missing the hypothetical question.
They could
talk about smuggling in
they
objects,
could fit,
not drugs.
They could fit into the Amazon locker. And then I could sell stuff by sending them to Amazon lockers. You see my point?
No.
Yeah, I do. Well, you're talking about merchandise and he's putting drugs in the merchandise.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm talking about
how fucking slow are you?
Sorry, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I realised that when you started talking, I was like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. That would be quite clever, actually.
Yeah, that is quite clever.
Someone needs to take that. If you're a drug dealer watching, take that idea.
No, I'm pretty sure that's already used. Like, people do that already.
How would they go about that, though? How would you go about putting...
But if you're sending stuff through the mail, the way they do that already, they just use, they have a letter that looks just like a bank statement or something. And then they have, like, metal foil or something to stop certain tests. And then they have, like, extra foil to stop, the smell from coming through. And then they put the drugs inside. Without having to, like, send along a piece of merchandise.
I would hire about 500 people.
It's a lot of people.
Yeah.
Is that
not
how you start out?
And put, like, drugs in them. And I think that's the best way to get it through.
Well, let's...
Not make them, like, take, like, snort in a line of coke and, like, just walk across the board. I mean, like, store the actual packaging. And
Yeah.
I think that's quite a successful way. That's a common one.
What if they rat you out, though?
What?
If they get caught, what if they rat you out?
They don't know who I am. I'll do it through,
How do you get a middleman, right?
Yeah, what I'll get 10 sort of really good, sort of reliable men.
How are you going to find reliable men?
Reliable men.
Industry?
So, for example, Suresh, Bart, Oiva. Three, right here.
No, I don't want to do that.
You'll be my sources. You'll be the guys
on the inside.
I don't want to walk around.
All right, I'll wear like some sort of like mask or something. I'll wear like a thing over my head.
What if? Okay, you have a. The guy writes out the middleman, and he knows you.
All right, and they never see our faces. How about that?
You guys.
But then how are you going to communicate?
We're gonna kidnap these bastards. Then we're gonna store that.
They're gonna be like, I'll work for you.
Yeah, but here,
we'll kidnap them, then like threaten to kill their families if they don't do it.
Exactly, that's the point. You guys clearly don't grasp the drug dealing.
Yeah, you two are just
so
pussy.
I'm so sorry.
You guys are
so rookies at this.
Yeah,
you threaten the people who are distributing your drugs. Harder and worse than any government out there. That's Agreed. The point.
Yeah. You don't just say, hey guys, can you give me a favor? Like, you know, like in Breaking Bad when they were like, he had that friend. He had a friend where he was just like, yeah, can you deal for me? He smoked most of his meth because he's your mate. You wouldn't get your mate to deal with it. You'd get someone that you don't like and they don't like you, but you threaten them in a way that they have to do it. Otherwise, their family and they will be killed. Yeah, you can't be moral about drug dealing. Drug dealing itself is not a moral thing. So you have to be a bastard.
Moral and moral, yes.
What I thought was very interesting is when you get to online drug dealing, things like stuff happening on the dark web, there was a journalist that interviewed via email one of these sellers that sells drugs online. And one of the questions that came up is like, why do you, like... why do you consistently give good service? Wouldn't being dishonest grant you more profit in the end? If you'd sell them something, you'd get the money and then never deliver the product or something, so that you just make the money without having to pay for anything. And the guy said, like, yeah, well, some people do it. They build up a good reputation for a bit, selling the right products or whatever, and then in one go they don't deliver anything and get lots of money from that. But after they've done that, their reputation is ruined, so they have to build it up again. Or they have to like build it up again under a different name. So it's a constant struggle of building up a reputation, doing the right thing, and then getting away with lots of money and then having to do everything all over again. And he said that, you know, actually I concluded that being honest and always doing the right thing and never trying to get too much out of the customers would be more successful and more profitable for me than being dishonest, actually.
Of
and
course.
I thought, that's interesting. So we're living in kind of, this is an almost anarchic situation where there isn't any central control. It's in a situation where everyone's anonymous. So you can get away with ripping the customers off. And still, the most profitable outcome for every party is to be honest. And to give the right sort of to never undersell or over undersell? I don't know what the term is for
undersell sort of, is right, yes.
Yeah. Undersell the product to the customer. And I thought, you know, that's actually quite fascinating. That even in a marketplace where there's no central control that can sweep in and say, you know, oh, that's unfair, we're gonna punish the drug dealer, even in a market like that, where there's no such intervention, being trustworthy and honest is still the best option. I thought, wow, that's kind of cool.
It is, though, like, especially for, you know, people in the sort of that sort of background where they are drug cartel, you know, big drug cartelists or whatever. They need to be, especially, let's say you're buying drugs off, like, another big major sort of drug dealer. then, like, you can't really, let's say, I don't know, you're buying, how much is 10 kilos of coke, but?
Let me do my mind math.
Yeah.
10 kilos of coke. Okay. 1 gram is 100. So, 1,000 grams is 100,000.
Hmm.
1,000 grams is 1 kilo. 10 kilos, that's 1 million pounds.
1 million pounds.
Say, 10 kilos of coke,
yeah.
1 million
so
pounds.
So you would have
10,
to do...
Yeah,
1 that, million. You know, you don't just like sort of... You know, you won't email that, yeah, I'll just email you the 10 million, you just post me that. You have to do like a hand-to-hand sort of exchange normally, don't you?
Yeah, but at that level, when you're dealing with 1 million pounds...
You're a beast.
You've got some, like, money laundering to do. You can't just, like,
money laundering,
that in your
bank. That is
bank.
Way... It's so easy to do money laundering now.
Wait, what is the concept of money laundering? How do you...
Set up a legitimate business
that
is... performing all right, doesn't even matter if they're underperforming or overperforming, and you channel all of your profit from the illegitimate business through that one and sort of whitewash it, saying like, oh yeah, I got this through the legitimate business, and even, you know, You even pay tax on it. Who cares? And you get all of that money, and so it's laundered or as if it were legitimate money.
Yeah.
Right. Wow.
You have to. Therefore, you have to set like
car washing.
Car washes, laundrettes, that's why it's money laundering. It's like, it goes through these stupid little facility businesses that are always running, that do tiny things, but then they somehow reek in lots of money.
Yeah. Like, how did this, it's like Roots, the Roots of Laundrettes making £8 million
today. And they probably do by the amount they charge.
£8 million
Yeah, the amount they charge, it's insane.
Yes. One of the laundry machines.
Actually, that's how they're, like, inconsistent. Like, the people that's, like, the people, the drug dealers that sell the laundrette, they're washing machines that work, so they are nicking us off money.
Yeah, yeah. One of the laundry machines.
Well, this Coke's fine, but my washing machine broke down, and I used your washing machine. It was terrible. Sorry.
Damn. So, wouldn't they get suspicious if, like, a laundrette's making millions?
Yeah, obviously. That's where you set up loads. Like, if as your business grows, you won't have one laundrette in the middle of nowhere. And it's like, this laundrette made £3.7 billion. Well, clearly a lot of people. It must have some quality washing machines.
And you go in there, it's like a small little hut with a single washing machine.
So,
And it's unplugged as well. It's just the person manually turning around. Like, yeah.
Some garbage. Yep.
But yeah, the, like in Breaking Bad, you had that main guy, Gus, who had this enormous chain of restaurants that he
also laundries.
Did his money, did he as well?
Chemical laundry, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So he had a variety of businesses set up, and all the money that he made through his big drug business, there's like small little bits went in here and there into all the companies, and he had great ties as well with like the police, and he supported the area, and he donated nice sort of heavily to charities and whatever, so he had a great standing, and no one would ever think that this guy who's just they'd think he's just a really successful businessman,
right,
is actually one of the main guys in this enormous,
and he's completely anonymous, so like, if you remember, he wouldn't like, when you guys were saying, wouldn't they rat you out? How can someone write him out if they don't know what he looks like? Most people that he deals with. And he only shows his face to the people that he trusts. And if they break their trust, he kills them. So there's not like, there's no sort of like, sort of middle ground where he's just like, sort of, just chilling. You have to be brutal and really sort of.
So beautiful. Makes me want to watch Breaking Bad again.
Makes me want to.
I want to watch it.
Makes me want to watch it.
There you go.
That's the.
Let's binge watch it right now.
Oh, I want to watch it.
I have HBO on my laptop.
I've got Netflix. So I've got them all as well.
Oh yeah, they're on Netflix.
I've got nothing. Okay.
All right, that probably puts the end to the conversation.
That probably ends that. Yeah, this section. That section
is definitely a zero.
Okay, Oliver, do you have something cool that we could talk about?
Hmm.
There's this 20th century philosopher.
What's his name?
French philosopher, Michel Foucault. Oh.
Fuck all, that's what he knew.
And that's what he did.
Philosophy. What's your philosophy?
Very nice philosophy. Yeah, he created this whole new method of doing philosophy himself, where he uses this kind of like fairy scope or like magnifying a glass kind of way of looking at history. He thinks history is done in a very dry way, where they just point out single points and situations back in the history, and then like historical points on those. But that, he thinks that's a wrong way to think about history, chronologically and definitely philosophically. Instead, he thinks we should have a method where we look back at the history, look at the ideas and thoughts people had, all the ideologies, and dig out the best out of them. So if there's something that happened in the history that in your mind or in any sort of ideology was better, you should try to implement that into your society. Nevertheless, or like without regarding the time, like the time is not that important.
What I heard of him is that he was actually quite new in thinking about history as not something that we're progressing from. Because most people were thinking at the time, I think, that there's this idea of progress where, you know, clearly today we're better off than we were years before, and that we're constantly going towards a better and better society. And he said, actually, no, there's stuff that you can learn from history, and history is not just like, oh, that those were the bad days and now we're in a better society. You can go back and say, actually, there are some very good things that we did in the past, or potentially good things we did in the past, that are actually worse off now. And so we can actually look at the past for moral reason to find what is right and what is wrong.
Yes, that's a very good point. I definitely resonate with that. I agree completely on that. And Foucault might not be exactly unique, but he was original. And he used this method to look at history, how history evolved crime system. Because back in the day, when people did do crimes, even like in religions, people were put in church. When they've done something, some sort of sin, they would be put on the sin bench, and everyone would see that. And in a way, the person who gets on the sin bench, they will gain the frowning faces and the isolation of the society, which makes them seriously contemplate on this, these issues they are having, on the society's half, not only on their half. But today, people are put into prisons where they're alone, or even with people who are also isolated from the bigger society. Nobody really sees into the prison, and they're taken back. They're taken away. They're taken to these dark cells where they are left completely out of the society. And that's a lot more inhumane than it was back in the day. So people actually socially recognized criminals, and criminals were recognized by the society, and that was a lot more humane than what we are doing now. Criminals still were a big part of the society, and that's one criticism of Foucault on the criminal punishment system today.
No, I've got to kind of agree with that. I think it, to an extent, it's less humane to not sort of expose the criminals to the rest of society for ridicule. I think ridicule by society of criminals is basically the natural order of things, the way that kind of makes sense to us instinctively. If there's a bad person, we want to put them in a place where, you know, they've got that pressure on them constantly, where they're like, yeah, I have to really think about what I've done, instead of putting them away and they're sort of, no one knows that they're criminals. They've never seen them. They're locked away. I think, yeah, I've got to agree with Foucault on that, on the humanity of prisons. And
yeah, and also these criminals are punished by a government. That's, in a way, it's subtle, but everyone still knows it's there. But it is subtle in how it's implements its force, because it's implementing its force by taking the individuals out of the society, and the society isn't really doing anything about it. And back in the day, when people were even given death penalties, they would be put to death in public places, marketplaces, where everyone could see the guillotine snapping the head off. And if a person who was inspired by the whole society, the people, the common people would revolt, and they would defend this inspirational figure who's only criminally punished by the government. Today, it's not easily going to happen, because all of the crimes are solved or punished behind doors, behind walls, in the dark.
You guys must be aware of Mahatma Gandhi, obviously. He's was a pretty big influential figure, and he's also wrongly associated for being a freedom fighter, when he was not at all a freedom fighter. He was an equal rights sort of, he wanted equal rights. He got pushed in by the Indian government to be a freedom fighter and be like, you know, and probably the person that rivaled him the most in India was someone called Bhagat Singh, who died at the age of 23. Because he got put to death. Basically, what he did around the age of 19-20, one of his party leaders was murdered publicly. So what he did, him and a couple of other guys went and shot the police officer. And then later on, when he realizes the party is full, he was in he was a socialist, was not getting the name around the country, so what he did, he got a fake bomb, so without the chemicals, and he blasted it in an assembly hall, and he blasted it in the empty seats. And what the British government did then, they obviously got him, and he, what he did, rather than try and run away, he dropped his gun, and he wanted to get arrested. And what he wanted to do, because he realised that the criminal system is so broken, he realised that he could not get the publicity he wants outside prison. So when he went to prison, he realised, like, the newspaper people would be there writing the case and everything, why he did that. And he realised people have to question him why he did this thing. So he tried to sort of dismantle the government from within the prison. And then he also, then the case where he killed the police officer was brought up as well. So what the British government said, they said, you know what, we don't care. Like, one of the first things the judge said to him, that your crime is so heinous, I don't care about your, you know, you tried to kill someone, I don't care about your motives behind it. And he said, he replied with that, if, have you ever killed someone? Have you ever put someone to death? And the guy said, of course I have. And then he said, well, then there's no, if you remove the motives, there's no difference between me and you. So then they had to listen to him.
Yeah.
They had to listen to him, and they listened. And what he did, he created a massive, sort of, almost created into a farce, a couple of years, like, just sitting in the, and he just arguing every single point, and brought, like, this, sort of, the British government into, like, slight, sort of, a point where people are, like, you know, realising what they were doing. And Mahatma Gandhi, and there was a massive wave against Mahatma Gandhi then. It was, there was more people against Mahatma Gandhi than there were for. And, when they realised that he'd actually killed the man, they didn't know that he'd killed the man. When they found out he had killed the man, he was put to death, basically, saying, yeah, you got the capital punishment. And when he got into prison, he realised that the prisoners aren't being behaved against properly. You know, they're given horrible food, you know, like, it's a horrible condition. So he went on a hunger strike, and he said that I won't eat anything from the prison as long as I don't get clean clothes, something to read, clean, like, nice food. And he went on, I think he went on to about 75 days without food. And,
how did he survive for 75 days?
It's just the fact, that was why he was considered, like, and the British government realised, because there was a million people that signed a thing for him not to get, and they were signed with blood. So people were cutting their thumbs, stamping it. And they were sending it to, like, the British government, saying that you, like, don't kill this guy. And what they did, they realised the movement was building to break him out of prison. They put him to death a day early. So when the thing was building up, there he was, just getting hung.
Wow.
Just behind the back doors. And they also, rather interestingly, before the case was actually, so before they gave the verdict for the case, what they did, they overruled everything. They said, right, we have to keep the courtroom empty, and there's no one else is allowed to be in it. So they created a law there where no one, not even newspaper, no media person's allowed to be in it. It's only them and that, and they refused to go to the court. They're like, you guys have already, I know that you're going to put me to death. He said that you've already decided, before the case itself, the government's already decided they're going to put me to death. The whole, like, the court scene is just, like, a massive farce formality that is just going to go through. So he refused to go to court as well, when he realised the media's not going to be there. And then he got put to death a day early. And the worst thing is, they didn't even, like, rather, they realised that if, like, they gave their body, what they did, the British also, like, took the body out from the sort of the back door of the prison, cut it up and burnt it. So they didn't even give it back to their families. To, like, you know, because they realised they didn't want, like, them to turn into some sort of martyrs. They did, but, like, you know, it completely backfired.
That's terrible.
That kind of links with the fact that you were saying that, you know, the government, about the criminal system, where they're basically doing everything behind door. Like, technically, if someone, let's say, if the court has ordered me to be hung, you know, I think it was 31st of March, 1931, and they hang me a day early, that's going against the court. But the government suddenly just jumped in and he said, nah, we'll allow that.
Hmm.
You want to talk about something else, man? Should I tell you what pissed me off?
No, go for it. What pissed you off?
Right. I don't know if it happened this week, but I read it about it this week. A female celebrity said that...
Selena Gomez.
No, I don't know what her name was. I can't remember the name. I do know. I think it might have been one of the Kardashians, maybe. And she said something along the lines of, oh, I've missed out on a childhood. like a normal child did. And like, I'm like, she's a millionaire. She lives what seems like a happy life. And she says she's happy, but she says she doesn't like the fact she missed out on a normal childhood. And that annoyed me. I was thinking, you've got everything, you bitch. Like, why? What did you? It's like, I'm so unhappy that I'm not poor. God damn it!
Yeah, yeah.
Like basically, that's what she's saying. Oh, I wish I was poor for like I don't get that. And I think that's like so sort of. You can really channel your energy, you know, or like what you say in the media in a better way than saying I wish I was poor, basically.
But you notice that a lot of celebrities have that view that they, whenever they're like child actors or something, they're always like, I really wish I just had a normal childhood. And then
it's kind of a shame.
Do you reckon it's because like most celebrities that do that are like child celebrities that were born rich, whereas celebrities that had to like make the money when they were poor and then they got rich, there was a bit difference between them, because they never say, oh, I wish I was still poor. But if you're a rich child, you're not like, oh, I wish I was a poor child.
Well, this is, I was listening to this rapper called J. Cole, who started off poor, and then he later became rich after rapping, and then he sung a song about becoming famous, and then the way he described being famous, it's great at the start, you know, you make heaps of new friends, you invite all these parties, all these, like, you know, things that just make you, like, high-class citizen, but conversely, he's always worried about losing his money, because that means he loses his friends and he stops knowing who his genuine friends are, like who to trust and who to put his trust in. He feels like he doesn't have a family anymore and people like love him like that. And so he says that's the downside of it. And he said he sort of wishes that he was back to where he was before, because even though it was a humble life, at least he knew who to trust and stuff like that.
Mm. Yeah. I think it's almost a mistake by all of society to think that being rich solves everyone's problems. Like, how is it?
It goes a long way.
How is it?
It goes a very long. Nah, it goes a long way. I think it's. I disagree with that.
How is it surprising to people that if you're rich, you have problems like greedy friends that are just there for your money and kind of being a bit upset that people always come to you in a kind of dishonest, malicious way where they just want to sort of make use of the fact that you're rich. How is that something that we're surprised by? That, you know, oh, if you're really wealthy, then, you know, not everything goes your way. I don't think that's particularly crazy.
But I also think, like, wealthy people, they say, oh, you know, money can't buy you happiness. And that's true to an extent. But money, a rich man tends to be happier than a poor man, I'd say. I think, for generally speaking, he will have more moments of, you'd rather be rich than poor. I think that is, a normal person would rather be rich than poor, so they, and also the fact that people say that money can't buy you happiness, it can't buy you happiness, but it can buy you things that make you happy. You know, like, come on, there's a lot of things, like, I want that car, if you're a poor man, you won't be able to get that car. You want a Lamborghini, you can buy that Lamborghini, it's just a phone call away.
Well, what I've seen somewhere, and I don't know exactly where the stats are coming from, but I've heard once said that beneath a certain level of wealth, you are struggling to live, you know, you've got little amount of food and so little amount to go on that, yeah, clearly you're unhappy. And so below a certain amount, dissatisfaction and not sort of not having a great well-being, that's linked with how much money you have. But after a certain point, when you're able to live off the money you have, having even more money doesn't actually significantly increase how happy you are.
Yeah.
So beyond a certain point, getting lots of wealth doesn't make you much happier. It actually, in some cases, makes you less happy, because you're kind of constantly being told the way you become happy is by gaining material wealth, like buying lots of things, buying cars and sort of linking cars to happiness, whilst no one's ever actually proven that that's the case.
Do you reckon it's more to do with the fact that maybe someone that is rich, or like let's say someone got rich, they actually thought that being rich was a lot better than what they found it to be. So they thought money could solve all their problems, and when they got to it, they saw, oh, money can't solve all my problems, and that's why they're upset. Rather than the actual fact where maybe your sort of your barometer for what is happiness or what makes you happy is raised significantly. For example, right now there's the things that will make you happy. I don't know, if someone presented you with a car, you'd be happy.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, but let's say if you're a rich person, if someone just presents you with your car, you're like, oh, I've got better cars. Just give it away.
Well, so you're saying the unsatisfaction or the dissatisfaction that comes from being rich is just because you expected it to be better.
Yeah.
And so you're a bit like, oh man,
come on,
it's not exactly like I imagined it to be. And that's because our society constantly tells us that being rich is great and that solves all your problems. What you need is wealth. That equals success and that equals happiness. It doesn't.
Yeah, they just make it seem like it will solve all your problems, where it obviously doesn't. There's obviously like a lot of social issues that come with being wealthy and that aren't solved by money.
Okay, let me get back to the actual point, right? I was annoyed at an individual that said that she was unhappy the fact that she missed out on a childhood which did not involve money. That she wasn't rich. And she wanted to be poor, basically. That's what she's missed out on, and she was unhappy that she missed out on that. And I'm like, I don't think she has sort of I think that point, that opinion that she had, was such bullshit. Like, why would you? I think she was one of the Kardashians. I don't want to say who it was because I can't remember. But it was one of those type of, like, around 19, 18, 19 year old.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's Selena Gomez.
It's Selena Gomez, or it was one of the Kardashians. Like, the one after. There's, like, I don't know what the Kardashians are. What are these Kardashians?
I don't know what they are either.
There's. Yeah, one of them too. And they said.
Sex tapers.
Yeah. Maybe not that.
Well, one of them became famous because of that, but the Kardashians was a big, pretty famous family beforehand, right?
No, it wasn't, was it?
No, it wasn't.
The whole reason they
was became... Was it all because of Kim Kardashian?
Yeah, because...
Because of Ray J smashing that.
Somebody made a sex tape on it, off her.
Wow. Ray J.
And then she made a business out of it.
There's like an amazing photo where she's with Jay-Z, Beyonce, and I think Kanye
yeah,
West. And it was Kim Kardashian, and it said the amount of Grammys each of one, and then they decided under Kim Kardashian... One sex tape, and that's it.
5 Grammys.
Well, like,
Grammys,
she's
7 Grammys,
cause, like,
sex tape.
People barely like even realize why she's famous anymore. Like,
yeah,
she's just famous for being famous right now.
She's There's people, and that is also what I've kind of like. But I'm not really annoyed at that. I'm more annoyed if Kim Kardashian now came out and said, "Oh, I missed out on a normal adulthood for being this famous. Oh my God, envy me." You know, basically saying, "Oh, I'm I'm not. My life's not been that great."
What I think people like Kim Kardashian say, the interesting thing about them is it kind of points out how the celebrities, this whole idea of celebrities works. Like, it doesn't even matter anymore why you're famous. It's disconnected from how you got there. You just enter in the bubble of celebrity and you can just stick around there and sort of you're constantly watching. People can talk about you and sort of judge you and magazines can write things about you. It has nothing to do with how you got there. It's completely disconnected from talent, from capability, from achievement. It's got nothing to do with that. And everything to do with, you know, these weird made-up things like glamour and sort of gossip. And it comes back down to sort of that people just effectively like to judge others and talk about others because it's the lowest and simplest form of talking, you know? You just discuss with people like, oh yeah, let's talk about this person that's hot, it's funny.
It was Kylie Jenner. Sorry.
Kylie Jenner.
Said she missed out on being normal, and one of the first replies was, I think I missed out on being a millionaire child. Like, that was everyone just like, what, like, amazing that, what is she actually famous for? Why is she famous?
She's inside in the family of the Kardashians.
So what
Jenner
makes her
famous? Kardashian, she was on the show The Kardashians, or Meet the Kardashians?
Yeah,
I don't know what it's
Keeping
called.
Up with the Kardashians.
Keeping Up with the Kardashians. She was on a TV show which is about the Kardashian family. That's it. It's not about like a special family that has something unique. It's special because it has a TV show about it, which is about it's a vicious circle, you know?
And media loves that. They love these type of... And the thing is, they're news articles. Literally, the media loves writing about them. And you sometimes read and you're like, why'd they do that? And I'm like, why do I care about these people? They've done nothing. They've not contributed to society in any way.
Reading those articles about them, you kind of get even a little bit of joy out of it. Like, oh, they're
like,
kind of weird.
I love listening...
And then you have to stop yourself and say, wait, I am becoming slightly happier and sort of patting myself on the back for judging a family that, you know, has nothing to do with me. Like, why am I just endorsing that kind of stupidity?
The difference is, like, I was listening to someone like Kanye West when he did his Grammy speech. When he said that people... When he did, like, this sort of imitation of people talking about him if he did not win. He was like, oh, I wonder what people will be like if they don't win. And then he's like, everyone talks about what will happen if I don't win.
I guess he'll never find out. And then he just raised like, his thing and he just walked away. I love that.
But oh then my god, there was this great moment where he went on the Ellen show.
Yeah.
And for like literally 7 minutes straight, he was the only one talking. Ellen couldn't like interject and say anything. He was just 7 minutes straight talking about all this kind of bullshit about why he wanted Mark Zuckerberg to give him $50 million to work towards making his clothing company. And he was making some interesting points. One was like, you know, he said he's sitting next to all these people and they're talking about sort of helping hunger and the climate and the environment. And I'm talking about my clothing and they're acting as if my clothing is less important. And then I sat back and was like, clearly it is. Clearly what you wear is not something that's of a necessity equal to...
Do you think he does it deliberately? I reckon he just takes the piss sometimes.
I don't know.
I think he's been like that for most of his life.
Yeah, I think he generally... I think he takes the piss. I think he does.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
When I go to the library...
Yeah.
...to do some work, yeah. And other people go to that same library...
Yeah.
...and this is not just, you know, sitting down and having chat. This is late at night. And I'm planning, you know, I'm going to work all the way into the night.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah.
People are going to do the same, you know. Yeah, some people are going to sit down and do all-nighters. Yeah,
yeah. Oh, exactly.
Instead of sitting down and doing work, what do? Well, they stand around and have little laughs and run up and down the corridors because it's so empty in the library at night. And they're, like, playing games and acting childish. And I'm like, why are you here? You're not here. You're missing out on sleep just to be... This has really pissed me off. This pissed me off
so
bad.
Did you tell them?
No, I didn't. I was like,
why not?
Oh, so I just put in my earphones, put the volume up. Like, oh, I'm
it would be annoyed. It would be polite for you to tell them to fuck off.
No, it wouldn't.
Yeah,
excuse me. Could you fuck off?
Well, was it in the silent area?
No. This was at like one of the social areas.
Mm-hmm.
But so I can. It's condoned, but still I'm just like. Just thinking out of their perspective, what's the point for them? They're missing out on sleep, they're fucking up their sleeping rhythm, just so that they can sit around and not do any work, but still think like they're being productive because they're in the library.
I would find that funny if there was no one else doing work there, but if someone's doing work, I wouldn't, because that's distracting. You come to the library to do work, and if I'm like, imagine doing that daytime, people would just be like, fuck off, what are you doing?
Mm.
Yeah.
So if doing it, if it was completely empty, and no, I remember when we went to the library and watched Deadpool.
Yeah.
That's fine, because there's no one around us. In fact, there was a guy that came over and just started watching, like, videos with us, and we're like, yeah. Please leave. Like,
this is we're like, that's a bit weird.
Yeah.
We should maybe get some work done. We should stop acting weird so that we don't endorse this activity.
Well, yeah, but, like, if we would not do that, there was two people working right next to us. We wouldn't be like, let's bang this movie on. Because that's just being inconsiderate in every single... That is, I would agree with that. That is,
no, that makes
and the problem
noise.
With those people is, the worst thing is, when it comes to the exam period and like the morning for the exam, they'll do that all night. And then when they come up, they'll have like the hair like messed up and it'll look like, oh, they're working so hard, feel sorry for these guys. Oh, empathy, lap it up.
It's like, yeah, if you're not going to do work, then spend your time at least having fun, because they're just sitting around in the library not doing
getting
work.
Getting stressed out.
Procrastinating.
Yeah.
And then feeling like, oh no, I spent all those nights in the library and I didn't work and all. Yeah,
well, what did you do in all those nights? You did fuck all.
I finally realised what pissed me off this week.
Alright.
I went to Roots and there's no fucking coconut milk. The whole week. I've been there 3 or 4 times by now.
Oh,
they've stopped stocking coconut.
Hold on, like, to be fair, I'm not saying taking the piss here, but I actually do agree with them, because they used to sell Rocky Roads at Roots, and I used to buy them, and I used to love them, and they just stopped selling them.
They probably never restocked. You were, like, the only one that bought them, right?
Yeah.
Probably not profitable, dude.
And then me and Bartek, and we were the only two
customers. No. There's, like, several different kinds of milks there, but just not coconut milk. And if I look at the others, they're completely full. Nobody's
oh my god, yeah, this reminds me of something that I'm annoyed about. When you go to the library cafe...
Oh, is this about the library? You just have a...
No, just go to the library and get pissed off, for fuck's sake! That's why I go there. I could go anywhere to be happy, but I go to the library so I can be pissed off. At the cafe, you know, they've got various paninis on offer.
Oh.
And they know which ones are the most popular. The tuna melt paninis are the most popular. But they always stock them the same amount as they stock everything else. So by the time I've gotten to the cafe, No tuna paninis inside. Just some fucking mustard ham paninis. So that I can't
eat. Equality.
It's so annoying. They know they're the most popular.
So I'd say the problem. The problem is...
Stock more
people,
of them.
People are lazy to calculate things like, oh, you know, people that run the place, they don't think logically thinking, oh, these people buy more of this, let's stock on that more. When you go to the supermarket, you normally see the same amount of everything. Like, yeah, this is like, you know, this. There's like loads of different types of rice, and they know one type of rice is more popular. They'll still have the same amount as everything else. There'll just be like a full sort of shitty rice, and then the nice rice, there'll be like one at the bottom that's half opened already, and like pouring onto like. Fuck's sake, I want that! And then no, because now you've got into the library cafe, the chances are you'll still buy something.
Yeah.
So if you go to Tesco's, for example, and you don't get your rice, you're like, oh, fuck it, I have to buy this shitty rice.
That's such a good point. It doesn't matter to them, because when I'm there, I'm hungry, so I'm going to buy something anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they're like, I don't care if you get exactly what you want. Yeah. If you're going to end up still paying for something, I don't have to care about the stocking.
Bloody nothing.
God damn it.
Such a life out
so
world.
So annoying that makes sense.
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay, guys, that was Red Switch the podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. Give us feedback on redswitchpodcast.com, and we'll catch you next week where we'll have a special guest.
Oiva. Oiva. Your comment on that.
Yeah, I know. You have a very valid point there. I think you're speaking the truth, boy.
No. You're speaking the truth, boy.
It's not funny.
No, for people listening, it's probably not funny.
And for me.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's very funny for you. You were laughing just as much as we are.
Boy.
Come on, that's funny. Oh, man.
Call this like a rough copy.
I have no clue where the fuck that came from.
No.
I think you ran out of things to say.
I was trying to come up with something to call you, then it just kind of like, boy.
What about mate or a damn yeah?
I was going to say like mate or bro or something, but then I'm kind of like, no, I don't want to say either one of those. Then fucking boy.
Oh, so you wanted to say bro and it was like, boy?
Yeah.